Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Handlum, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt. And from the makers of the first two fairy tale episodes we did, including... And also some ones that were better than that one, we bring you Fairy Tale Episodes Part 3, Revenge of the... Shtick.
Revenge of the Avery.
Revenge of the Tex Avery. Yes. Because this one's inundated with Tex Avery cartoons. Even though it's 2 out of 3, and the third one is someone who couldn't be more different from Avery in my eyes. But
And the third one is someone who helped animate on a Tex Avery cartoon.
So it's a little bit fitting.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, no, these are... We're back in our fairy tale cartoon BS, and this is a... pretty nice shake of things, as far, because when we do two of them, we're like, okay, are we running out? No, of course not. It's a Warner Brothers cartoon. They did too many fairy tale cartoons. We're not running out of time soon. So we got three good ones here.
The ones we got covering today are Cinderella meets Fella, A Gander at Mother Goose, ending with The Turntail Wolf.
Right. And this is, again, we're back in... For the second week in a row, we do have a 30s one to do. But yeah, we got a nice mix of, you know, 30s cartoons, 40s cartoons, and there's a 50s one in there. So we get a nice mix of the different eras of Warner Brothers cartoons.
Starting with Cinderella Meets Fella, which came out on July 23rd, 1938. Guards, what happened on that day? And I'm going to do the nice actor one. And not the sad as hell Germany one. This is 1938. No, seriously. How about that day? It's like
Oscar Schindler found dead.
No. It was like Germans give Jews a deadline to apply for identification cards. For like identification cards or whatever. It's like, okay.
No.
We all know where this is heading.
No, not that one. But you have a nice actor one?
I think so, because it is someone who, it's someone that would be like being in movies. Ronnie Cox.
Oh, that is an actor.
Who's appeared in such productions as RoboCop and the 1990s Captain America movie, was born on this day.
And Total Recall. He's in Total Recall.
And Total Recall.
Come on, that's the one I like the best. No, Ronnie Cox is one of those guys that, like, he was in basically everything for a good, like, 15 years from, like, 1980-something until, like, the mid-90s, and he was good in basically everything. I think most nerds also know him as the other commander of the Starfleet Enterprise in the Next Generation series. He was the less fun one than Picard. I have sent... There's several Jellicoe, a Star Trek story memes that I've seen that I've sent to Brandon that we've both gotten kicks out of. Also, according to Brandon, Ronnie Cox, like, after he was acting, he went on a successful country music career, and Brandon has, like, an email or something, like, addressed from Ronnie, basically saying, like, hey, thanks for looking into my music, you know, hope you enjoy. So he's apparently just a good...
Isn't this such an uplifting on this day?
Yeah, it's funny, because when nice actor one, I'm like, okay, well, how nice is he going to be? And you picked one who's actually nice.
Yeah.
Where did it go?
Woo! All right, this short was directed by Tex Avery.
Woo!
Written by Ted Pierce.
Yes.
With one D.
Yeah, they misspelled Ted's name.
D yet. Misspelled it.
Welcome to the company. We're going to remove a D.
You'll get the second D when you write really good. He wrote really good, really quick. Okay.
Yeah, he must have gotten the second D immediately after this one. Not to spoil our thoughts on this one at all, but...
Yes.
We like it.
Yes. So, This is the final cartoon with the mid-1938 opening theme, which was used starting with Jungle Jetters, which is a short we'll never cover on this show.
Yeah, just from the title, I'm like, yeah, that's not going to end well.
Also, oh, come on, the opening theme wasn't that mid. It sounded like all the other ones. Nah. Come on, don't be mean.
No, not the mid-30s. No, not that kind of...
So, Cinderella in this cartoon bears a slight physical resemblance to Little Red Riding Hood from Little Red Walking Hood, which is another Merry Melodies fairy tale cartoon that features Elmer Fudd, which Tex Avery directed the previous year. Hmm. So he was on a big fairy tale kick in the late 30s.
Yeah, this is around the time he would do Birth. So, like, he was just kicking these out, you know?
Well, I think because they're fairy tale cartoons, he didn't have to focus on the story so much.
Yeah.
Let's just do a bunch of gags, so.
So many of these, especially the text ones we're covering, are very much like, okay, how can we fuck with this? How can we just, all right, we have the plot of the fairy tale. Especially in this one where it's like, okay, we're fucking with this, and then we have to stop and fuck with this now, and then, oh, we're going to fuck with this big time. And, like, you know, in a good way. It's not like, oh, it's terrible, isn't it? It's like, okay, this is clever. Let's do something funny with it. And that's honestly the Tex mentality that would serve him well anywhere he worked.
So, we begin this cartoon with good grief live action opening.
Yeah.
Oh my god. And keep in mind, folks, this is 1938. Snow White was...
just out.
Snow White even out? Like, oh, this is right at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's just so, after that. Yeah.
Warner Bros. Is like, oh, we can do a live action opening. It's like,
sure.
Really?
By the way, the one thing you skipped over was, I think it's after this.
What did I skip over?
No, nothing. No, it's
I just started the cartoon.
Sorry, I thought you had, because the whole thing is you're turning the page, like, oh, you're invited to the ball. And then there's the next page, it's like, afterwards there's, come down and have a, and I, again, very 1938, they still hyphenated cheeseburger. It's a cheeseburger. It's not one word yet. That tickles me.
Was the cheeseburger was a brand new invention at the time, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They couldn't even smash the word together yet. They had to wait until Germany was okay with it. But they were obviously not okay with a lot of things at the time. So.
No. It wasn't yet old enough to live in paradise. No. So. It's a conventional Cinderella fable. We all been with the stepsisters taunting Cinderella, saying that you're not allowed to go to the ball, and they shut the door, they open it up, and they're like, and we mean it.
And we mean you.
You're not going. Yeah. We mean you. As Cinderella is by the fire, and she just raises the flame.
I like that.
That
even the candle has a dimmer notch on it. I like that detail.
As she's waiting for the fairy godmother to show up, right? Am I missing anything?
No, you didn't.
Here's the fairy godmother show up, and she's like, oh my god, she's 15 minutes late. Where is she?
There's the cuckoo clock, even. The way the cuckoo clock just juts out and goes, like, it's 9 o'clock. Like, it's just... And then it's like, oh shit. She calls the police.
Yeah, she calls the police. Police. My fairy godmother is 15 minutes late. In other words, cut to Mel Blanc.
Go get her, boys!
Yes. God bless Mel. And then the very 1938 gag after this of her listening on the radio and going, oh, I hope they find her. Don't worry, lady. We'll search every beer joint till they do.
As a police van drives up the house and a cop just goes and throws a very conventional witch caricature into the house.
Yeah.
So, like, I choose to believe that's actually not a fairy godmother. They literally just went to a bunch of bar joints and went, okay, you.
I like that. I mean, the one thing about, like, because after this, it's just like, all right, well, you know, they don't really, there's no reveal, because Tex is thinking one gag at a time, clearly, and there's no real reveal of where the fairy godmother was, why she was late. We're just on to the next thing Avery can fuck with, which, I mean, it's definitely a case of this being an earlier cartoon, and it's less, like, completely front-to-back plot-based, but it's like, okay, I kind of wish that would sort of factor into the rest of this. It's like, okay, what's with this fairy godmother? Why was she late? Where was she? But it was really just for the sake of that gag, which is a funny gag. It's just, all right. It's not leading anywhere. Okay, cool.
Yes, as she's trying to find her wand, as she takes out a bottle of booze instead, like, oh, sorry. I don't see that. As she just gives Cinderella the nice blue dress, and she loves it. And of course, gotta get the carriage, the pumpkin carriage. So she just takes out a pumpkin out of a can.
Yeah.
Why don't you look real tailored?
All the department stores and all the stores are just pulling that out. All right, it's October. Get the pumpkin out of the can.
As she uses her magic to... Oh, wait, no.
No, slot machine.
Then she has to go, oh, yeah, of course. It's the... There's so many slot machine jokes.
Yeah, it was the 30s, yeah.
It's the 30s. Gambling.
Yeah.
Gambling's the funniest goddamn thing. So, yeah, so gambling joke hits the jackpot. And is it just me, or were you expecting more mice to come out of there than the ones that did?
I was expecting less mice, actually, because I was like, all right, you need really? Your 3 footmen. And then like 8 or 9 pop out. I'm like, all right, I was expecting only 2 or 3. All right, cool.
All right. So they all get rid, all tied up. The witch, pretty much. The fairy godmother flies her magic, and they become Santa Claus.
Oh, sorry. I guess I got my dates mixed up. I love that. Oh, man.
And so eventually, she does it again and becomes like a Western saloon. It's like
a Western stagecoach. And she's like, I guess this will have to do.
Fine. Go ahead. Lifts up the door like it's a garage. God. Like, okay, go ahead.
At this point, he was just showing up. This is the kind of 30s lunacy I can get behind.
We go over to the castle with the great line, with the great header of free parking till midnight. No cover charge.
You see, so many gags in this age really well because, you know, they weren't like, you know, completely embedded in 30s culture. It's like, okay, that's still a thing you can laugh at. Or like, okay, the wall just opening up like that. That's funny. It's like, okay, it's, I mean, there's a lot that haven't aged well in this. I mean, not like irreparably so, but like there's enough that actually still makes me laugh in 2023 that is impressive.
As these trumpet men, they come in, they blast the horn and say, hey, Cinderella's coming.
She'll be driving 6 white horses when she comes, Nadia. She'll be driving 6 white horses when she comes.
The Cinderella comes in. This is the one part that I found kind of icky, because Cinderella is young.
And they still
She's young in this. Yeah. And they're like, woo, baby! Like, eh.
Wolf whistling, you say? Tex Avery picture, you say?
Yeah. So, okay. And then they ask Prince Charming. Okay, here comes Prince Charming. And who is it? Making his official That's Not Quite Old Folks shorts appearance. We're not counting Quackbusters.
No,
it's Egghead.
Yes.
It's fucking Egghead.
You didn't tell me Elmer Fudd was in this picture. To quote the director of the Columbo episode we just did.
Oh, I miss these cartoons.
Oh, yes.
So, he's just perfect in this.
He kind of is, yeah.
I'm not a big, like, Egghead connoisseur or anything, but just the way he shows up, like, ta-da!
Hey! By the way, and is it me or does Egghead sound like Pauly Shore in this one?
What a beautiful girl! I can't get over it.
A bit. Yeah. Oh, you don't sound like Pauly Shore.
Hey. No, but...
As... Yeah. I just love how he says how, it's essentially just here for the kicks. Yeah, that's what Egghead gives off in this. As he just feels like, I can't get over it. Oh, as him and Cinderella, they, you know, do this dance. there's also a classic.
Yes.
This is a classic moment I've seen where Cinderella kisses Egghead on the nose, leading the lipstick remarks to go,
Oh, boy. I'd seen that in a Golden Collection before, and you can drink that. And honestly, this sequence where they're dancing as, you know, the song goes on about how the night's going on and how, you know, the midnight eventually has to chime, it's a really nice moment. Yes, this is a very silly cartoon, but this is actually a very good romantic, well-paced sort of montage with all these little fun gags, maybe not too substantial, but fun gags as he sort of just, you know, gets onto, like, dances over a table or something like that. And as this music's going on, and I love the dissolve to the cuckoo desperately trying to stop the hand from reaching midnight. That's wonderful. It's like, no, this is going too well. We don't want it to go back to the way it was. It's like the fairy tale fighting itself, and I love that.
Yes, but the clock does strike 12. As Cinderella leaves, comes back, and drops the shoe on purpose.
Yes.
It's like, here. That's great. We have to hit this mark. Bye. As Egghead is running all throughout the neighborhood, screaming for Cinderella.
What did you make of the moment where Egghead looks under the saloon doors and emits this little... Something's up. You can play that in. I can't do it justice, but like it's an odd noise.
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't really get it myself. I'm like, oh, okay, sure, whatever. So Egghead's like, oh, where are you, Cinderella? Where are you? Cut to, again, this is such a classic Avery sensibility of just big neon sign, Cinderella's house. Cinderella's house, 5 miles.
So
right
good.
There, right there. As he runs in, goes all over the place. He even looks inside the cuckoo clock leading to the great gag of all the birds going out and going,
now you know she wouldn't be in here.
I love that. That's so good. Oh my
fantastic.
God.
So, Egghead looks at this letter that says, Dear Princey, I'm sorry I couldn't wait forever. I've gone to see a Warner Brothers show.
Yes.
Which, again, I kind of love, like, it's the 30s, so it's like, well, movies are new terms, so they just went to a Warner Brothers show.
What do you think was newer, movie or cheeseburger?
Mmm. Good question. It's a very good question. Man, yeah, that's crazy. Wait till the first person who ever ate a cheeseburger at the movies.
Oh.
My God, sir! What are you doing? And that man's name? Wimpy.
Yes, yes. Sure, would you keep it down? We're trying to watch a fucking movie.
Okay, it's way off topic. Did you ever see the Robot Chicken sketch?
Yes, I have.
Where it's like the marketing guy trying to update Popeyes. They're like, no, you don't eat spinach no more. You eat ass.
Yes.
All the kids are eating ass. And just Wimpy going, well, I'll trade you a nickel for a fine cheeseburger. Oh, I mean, I'm sorry. Well, I'll trade a nickel for a fine piece of eating ass.
It's funny. Actually, I've seen like two or three other Popeye-related Robot Chicken ones. I don't think I've seen that one because I've seen the one where Popeye comes to collect on Wimpy's part of the Gladly Pay You Tuesday for a Hamburger Today deal, which is very funny.
Right.
And there's one that I think is like a This Is Your, like a It's a Wonderful Life thing where Popeye, like, sees what life would be like without him, and I think like olive oil has like giant fake tits or something like that. Don't quote me on that. But they would go to the Popeye well a lot, and don't quote me on this either. I'm 90% sure that the guy they would get to voice Popeye every time Robot Chicken would do a Popeye sketch was Dave Coulier. I think they did. No, that's not a joke. I think they did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
He's literally everywhere you look. Thank you.
I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Oh, Wimpy. Your FICO score alone won't let me do that.
Oh, hamburgers.
Here you go.
Thank you. Oh, sweet hamburger.
It's Tuesday, Wimpy. Where's me money?
Oh, dear Popeye. I don't have it, but I'd gladly pay you Tuesday.
You forced me to do this.
No, no, not the spinach. No, please. I'll suck your dick.
Well, blow me down.
Anyways, so Aunt's crying like, oh no, where could she be? And then, because it's a 1930s Tex Avery cartoon,
she's in the fifth row, baby.
We have a silhouette of a woman going, hey, no, I'm over here.
I love it.
And Lee's goes enter stage left, essentially. And she's going, oh, don't worry, I wasn't gonna leave you.
I love that.
So what should we do now?
Let's go back to the 10th row and stay for the newsreel.
Woo!
I love this so much.
Oh my god.
It's a cute meta ending. It's not like a destructive meta ending. It's genuinely adorable, and I love it.
Oh, man. I love late 30s Avery energy.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much... It was more gag-focused than story-focused, yes. But I'm always willing to forgive a short that's more gag than story-focused if the gags are really good, and the gags here are really good. It's a regular Looney adaptation of the tale... And even Egghead gets some laughs in. I had no idea I was going to enjoy Egghead as much as I did watching this cartoon.
Yeah, no, I wasn't expecting to adore this one as much as I did. It's clearly not perfect. There's one or two moments where I'm like, okay, why are we doing this? But the gags are on a completely different level. And they subvert the story more carefully and skillfully than something, you know, like... And it has the absolute sweetest ending ever. This might be one of my favorite Avery Warner Brothers ones. And that's not something I say lightly because he did a lot of really good ones in this era. I genuinely really love this one. And I'm glad that we finally got to cover it.
Yeah, actually one thing. Because this short actually isn't available. Oh, no. It's not on the second one. Jerry and George, since you guys are cool fans. Could you put this cartoon on the next collector's choice? Since that's the because this thing is one of those shorts where it's on Max, it's remastered on Max, but it's not available physically. So get on that. It's a really good one. Enjoy.
Please, we love it.
Yeah, we have our tech shorts to it now.
It's so. Not racist either.
Yay! All right, animal rating. I'm giving this short a 4 out of 5 animals.
And I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5, because I loved this so much.
All right.
And now, to what I did expect from this episode, which was an Avery blackout gag short. This is A Gander at Mother Goose, which was released on May 25th, 1940. On this day, the Battle of Dunkirk begins.
Oh! Okay.
Yeah. A little happier than your war one, but don't know what happened on that day. Chris Nolan has a movie for you.
Yeah.
Featuring a very Welsh Mark Rylance, a very indecipherable Tom Hardy, and a very punchable Barry Keoghan. So go check that out if you'd like. This is another Tex Avery film that was written by Dave Monahan. This one has your murderer's row of early 40s voice actors. Mel Blanc is here, obviously, but so is Sarah Berner. Robert C. Bruce does the narration, as he's prone to in this era, and it's your run-of-the-mill gag per second kind of thing, where it's like, okay, let's stuff all the fairy tale and mother and nursery rhyme related gags we can into one cartoon. So if you're into those,
and Robert McKimson is a credit animator on it.
Well, there you go. So that connects it to the last one we had. So that's pretty cool. So first of all, what sold me from the very beginning of this one. Was after the actual credits of this, when they tell you who actually worked on it, there's an extra credit that says technical advisor, Mother Goose. That is the extra mile that I am 100% okay with. It's like, all right, we got Mother Goose to make sure we were doing this right, guys. Wink. Sure. They make it work. Literally, the first line of my cartoon notes here is, and Hepburn impression.
Which. To be fair, to be absolutely fair, this really felt like a gag that Tom Ruger and company would do for Animaniacs.
Absolutely.
It felt very Animaniacs-y. That, like, quick
Alley. Well, I mean, they loved these cartoons, absolutely. So it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, it's a really good direct line. But yeah, it's very much, look at our garden. Isn't it wonderful? How do you do it? Oh, confidentiality. It stinks. Pan out. There's, like, trash everywhere.
Yeah, no, it's an easy, merry, merry, quite contrary gag.
Yeah.
But it gets us going. I laughed at the Humpty Dumpty gag because that honestly could go out today where he falls to the ground, gets up, oh, I'm fine. It's Mel going, oh, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. That was easy. And he walks away and the only bit of the egg that cracked was his ass. And so he just moons the audience.
Yes.
Which means the fifth reference of this cartoon, this episode, and the little egg behind.
His ass crack. God damn it.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, well.
Shit.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Okay, Fred. Very clever of you. The next one's Jack and Jill. I love Robert C. Bruce's frustration at Jack and Jill missing their cues. It's just like, you know, Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill, and it's like, where are they? And then Jack comes around, and Jack is like this Mortimer Snurd type, this sort of a yup guy. And he's been pecked at by kisses going, to heck with the water.
just like the ugliest Jack I've ever seen in a film.
Well, there's a pretty ugly Miss Muffet up next.
Yes. Yes, there is.
Yeah. This gag's par for the course in this era. Yeah. Plus, so far, Sarah Berner has played both a Hepburn impression and a wild, ugly lady character. So that's both of her specialties filled in. Both the things she always came in to warn her to do. Like, all right, can I go home now? I did the things you like having me do. So that one's all right. The Three Little Pigs one, which, okay, that's not a nursery rhyme. That's a regular old fairy tale.
It is, but just from animation level, I love that they're three porkies. The porkies.
Yeah.
The three little porkies. I love that.
Yeah, no, this is a good one because it's you don't know where the joke is until far too late because it's actually just really well animated of just the wolf blowing down the, and it's Mel doing as usual, and the thing he usually does is the wolf, and he'll do it in the next one as well.
Yeah.
And
if it ain't broke.
It's really good animation. Yeah. But no, it leads to a simpler gag, but I like how it's executed because the whole thing is that, like, he's trying to blow down the door and the pigs give out a white flag and give him a bottle of Histarine, which is a take on Listerine, basically a bad breath joke. And I love Mel's response of,
why don't some of my best friends tell me these things?
Simplest gag in this whole cartoon is the toy soldiers gag, where, like, they're marching in unison, but you pull back and they're all in different, and they're all stepping over each other and all in different ways of doing that.
Oh, was that the joke?
Yeah.
I honestly didn't notice.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I did notice.
Oh, yeah, this is happening.
I'm I wrote down here, there's no joke here. Because it's like, oh, okay.
There is a joke, it's just not a very good one.
Exactly, exactly.
It's like, oh, uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, the next one, which is the Wishing Star one. Okay, now we're really running around, because it's just a rhyme you say when a star comes across. It's like, that's not a nursery rhyme.
No, it's a starting point for Disney's next animated feature film.
Yeah, and for DreamWorks' latest. But yeah, this one's simple, but it charms me because it's Mel Blanc as a dog reciting this. And it's another yup kind of character. But the very wholesome ending of this where he gets what he wishes for and it turns out a giant tree just comes up next to him and that's all the dog wanted is just a tree. Yeah. I love that. That's wholesome as hell. Next one is Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, and it's the reprise of the Humpty Dumpty gag, only his ass is on fire, which
it is.
Begs me to ask, how is exposed asses a running gag in this one?
I mean, my takeaway from the Jack one is, oh, it's Mel doing his Bugs voice. Cool. All right.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's another ass joke.
Hot ass. Fiery ass. Ass fire. Fire in the hole?
Ass fire. The only real, like, okay, the next two honestly haven't aged very well. because this one is the old woman who lived in the shoe. It's very much a sexism kind of one.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, the husband never does anything, and the wife takes over after the kids. It's the 30s. Everyone's sexist. The one after that is a Hiawatha, a hunting one, where he shoots an arrow in the air, and a very perturbed eagle comes down and berates him for it. Surprisingly, this is one of the least racist depictions of Native Americans in any of these cartoons.
Right.
It's actually, I mean, it's not great, but it's, you know, it's like kind of,
coming,
yeah, that's just a kid.
Coming, yeah, it's a pretty wholesome one. It's not too bad. Congratulations, fellas. You did 130.
Why don't some of my best friends tell me these things?
Yeah. Gold star. We end on another not even remotely nursery rhyme. Just the opening line of "Twas the Night Before Christmas," which is the second one of these that randomly brings up Christmas.
Guys, can you give us a couple months?
It's fucking October.
Yeah.
Jeez. But I... this one's probably the most famous gag in this cartoon, because it's like, okay, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse, and it's two mice, and it's one very quietly saying, "Merry Christmas," and the other mouse, in a full male yell, is
quiet!
That breaks the not a creature was stirring thing. It's like, oh, shit! You know,
which, I love how, like, there's this big yell. You know, usually when you do, like, the iris out, just like a da-da-da, like some sort of like, music thing.
Yeah.
I love how it's silent. It's just...
Yeah. It's like, well, you fucked up. We're going to berate you silently as we get out of the cartoon. Way to go, Mel.
Oh, thanks, Mel. You broke all our microphones. It was a good
great.
Yell.
Great, we gotta go pay for another one.
It was a good yell, wasn't it? Yeah!
Do any of our animators know how to raise some money for more microphones? Well, Richard can sing. Oh yeah, I suppose I can. I'll do a couple of nightclub gigs, and then I'll come back with another couple $1,000. No, you won't, and 2 days later. Oh, here you go.
Do you think Richard was at the Bing Crosby trial?
He stood in for Bing if he didn't make it. It's like, well, if he doesn't show, we'll just have our man Richard do it. It's like, how do you plead? Actually, I give up the suit. It's not that big of a deal. Oh, crap, Bing's here. Never mind. Hey, who was that guy? Say, you got a hot, fiery Irish temper. I got a song about the Irish.
Oh, Irish people all evolve from rats.
Oh, my gosh.
And they wear their worn-out livers as their hats.
That's ridiculous.
They sleep in piles
of dung.
All right,
that's... Yeah, okay.
Never they even eat their
All
young.
Right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Paul Giamatti's here. That's not right. You're insane. Paul Giamatti...
All right, so... So, what are your thoughts on the cartoon?
All right, yes, the thing we're supposed to do here. Again, our Mother Goose. A lot of these blackout gag ones are less consistent than I'd like, but this one had some very nice gags, even if there were a few too many lulls for me. I also just feel like after a while he ran out of nursery rhymes and just added other random shit, like, you know, just, okay, here's a fairy tale, see if they'll notice. Here's a random thing we say when there's a star. Here's a line from a poem about Christmas. I'm desperate here. I mean, it still worked in the end, but you could see him just scratching at what else to include in this.
I think there's more hits than misses, in my opinion, in this one.
Yes.
But it is very much like, listen, it's, you also kind of tell maybe by this point, they were like, can we please stop doing these now? You want actual characters. We have Porky Pig now. We can do actual character work instead of just relying on these blackout gag shorts. But I'd say this is a pretty good attempt.
Yeah, no, I like it. It's not perfect, but I like it. I'm giving this one a 3.5 out of 5 anvils.
I'm also giving this short 3.5 out of 5 anvils.
Out of Fred World and into Bob World.
Yay! Alright, last short we got here is the Turntail Wolf. It came out on June 28th, 1952. Jordan, did you find anything on this day? Because I didn't.
Not a fucking thing.
Not a fucking thing. Alright, cool. This short was directed by Robert McKimson, written by Ted, this time credited with 2Ds, Pierce. Got the promotion.
We get Ted in 3D in the next one.
Some notes here. The three little pigs depicted in this short are the same pigs previously seen in the Bugs Bunny short, The Windblown Hair, which we covered previously.
Yeah. Didn't we do that in the last Fairy Tale episode? Or am I sniffing glue?
I think we covered it during June Bugs.
Oh, yeah, we did. Never mind then.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah, so, also by Bob Gilson 3 years earlier, with different voices this time. Yeah, so just reuse the designs. It's like,
Mel doing the voices this time, because it's easier.
Yeah.
By the way, this is also a soft remake of The Trial of Mr. Wolf, which we did do in the last Fairy Tale episode,
I believe.
And we really liked it. Instead of with Little Red Riding Hood, this is with, obviously, Three Little Pigs. So.
It's the true story of the Three Little Pigs, but done by Warner Brothers.
Leave John Cheska out of this.
Which, a side note, if you haven't read his books, read his books. They're really fun and good.
Oh, he's great.
They're really fun and good. Yeah. Like, they're legitimately funny books for all ages.
Great kid lit, absolutely.
Oh, man.
So, can I just say, Mark, that the first minute of this gave me slight pause, because this begins with the younger son, or younger nephew in this case, of a lead character going in a higher-pitched voice, "Oh, the shame of it! Who directed this again?"
Literally, my first note.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, basically.
It's Sylvester Jr.
Sylvester Jr. over here. It pretty much is, yeah. It's the same fucking voice.
Oh, the shame of it. Flesh of my flesh. Blood of my blood. Oh, my own kinfolk.
The Kimson just like, all right, I know how to do this one thing. I'll do it here as well.
Though I will say I did like the reveal of the wolf. It's a bootlegger.
I love that, yeah.
Jimmy, like, hides everything. Like, sorry. Come in, nephew.
The setup of this cartoon is actually really cool, because the big bad wolf's nephew is just learning about the story of the three little pigs in school and is asking his uncle for the real story, and that's what this cartoon is. This uncle who's more like the... He seems like the more, like the uncle on the other side of town that gives you chocolate after... when you're not supposed to, kind of. Like, just the sort of the hard-edged uncle's like, all right, kid, this is what's really going on. You've got a cigar the whole time. It's like, all right, I'll tell you what really happened. You know, no, none of them. There was no blowing anything down. You know, it's like, I was a good... And he, with the voice, you can tell that he clearly, you know, did something in his past, but not in the story he tells us.
So he does this pitch, and this is pretty much the trial of Mr. Wolf right here. You know, like, oh, I was an innocent... I loved all of nature. I loved the bugs and the trees and even the caterpillars that barked at me like dogs.
I like that. That was a different thing from the original.
Yeah. Yeah, I still prefer...
Go on, you joink! At your own age!
Yes.
I prefer
that. I love
that. I still prefer
the yelling
that,
bee.
But, yeah, this is right. As... And he sets up how, you know, he has to go by the three bears' house. Oh, no. That's the other one. Has to go by the three pigs' house.
If the wolf went to the three bears' house, that fairy tale would end pretty quickly. Knock, knock. Sorry, I'll be leaving. No,
hey! There's the three pigs' house. He goes, oh, I'm scared of the three little pigs, but... I can't have them know that. I'm gonna be all confident. He skips into frame.
Why are you doing your exposition from Baham Duck voice? I can't have them find out that I'm scared of them.
No. So the big bad wolf. So the big bad wolf goes by the pig's house. Me and the pigs are immediately giving him shit. They're immediately, according to this narration, he's giving him shit. Goes like, oh, you know, you should stop it or else I'll blow your house down or something. Leads one of the pigs to yell out, and I quote, Go blow your brains out. Which, okay, I get it. He's a big bad wolf. But, Jesus.
The one thing that I noticed from this part where the wolf is talking back to the pigs is he has this sort of limp-wristed kind of, like, and I'm not one to stereotype at all. No, I don't do that. But, like, there's something about how he talks back to them and just has this sort of limp wrist, and it's not the most masculine of ways to assert his dominance, which is, again, like, you know, he's trying to come off as not ferocious and not the villain. But, like, maybe there's a way of doing that, Mr. Wolf, that doesn't make you look like, I don't know, somebody from Astoria, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, so the pigs, they do this thing where, you know, like, oh, well, you know, we'll play with you, Mr. Wolf, we'll play some games. And the wolf doesn't know what the games are, and of course, all the games are just the pigs bullying the wolf, you know, beating him up.
This was around the point where I realized that not only did the pig in the red shirt sound a lot like Daffy, without a lisp, but the other two pigs emitted a yeah, yeah, sure, sure. So everybody in this cartoon sounds real familiar.
Hey, wait a minute, fellas. He ain't such a bad guy. Let's leave him play with us.
Huh? Oh, yeah, yeah. Sure, sure.
Hey, Big Bad, we're sorry we picked on yous. You want to play slingshot with us?
He's the man of a thousand voices that he goes back to from time to time to time to time to time.
Yes. That's fine.
Yeah.
Mel's, of all people, Mel's allowed.
He's allowed.
And again, like I like some of the ways they go about just detailing how they mess with the wolf. Like, again, a great POV shot of the slingshot firing the rock at us, and then the reveal of how the wolf landed and what he looks like just through the tree with the rock sticking out his backside. Like, that's pretty good.
There's this next one, which is surprise, surprise, which is a very typical Dynamite gag. You know, go, gotta close your eyes. Here, 3, 2, you got exploded. Though I did like the little...
The timing of the explosion did still work for me, though. But yes, it is a pretty...
Though I did like the little... from the wolf. Just... It hurts.
Just him just sort of his head peeking out of his legs. And then a lot of these are just sort of simple. It's just like, all right, the wolf gets it. Like, swat the fly. Just how beat up the wolf looks as they kind of keep coming back down on him. Yeah, you know. I mean, you kind of feel sorry for him, which is not ideal.
Yeah, I do like the narration. He's just like, then we played a game called Swat the Fly. Of course,
I was the fly.
I was the fly, of course. Which is a...
Yeah.
Which is a Mike Wazowski gag, if I've ever heard one.
A little bit, yeah.
So,
remember to tip your waitresses.
So, okay, so we're in this typical, you know, whatever. You feel bad for the wolf, it's kind of whatever. And then a sign gets posted up on a tree. It says, Wolf Tales for $50. If you cut on the dotted line, we'll give you $50. And... I do love the detail of the pigs, all the pigs' eyes turning to dollar signs. I love that.
And shit gets real.
Yeah, shit does indeed get real. As they go, okay, new game. We're going to play King for a Day. Here, you're the king. Here, as they sit him down on a guillotine. It just happened at the ready, apparently. As just
apparently, you know, there's... Which is weird, because they're pigs, and usually pigs get guillotined.
So, the wolf is very much like, oh, you know, thank you so much for this. You know, I thought you guys were doing this just to get my... Lifts up his tail out from behind him. The guillotine goes down and just... Tail!
Yeah. That's almost a Daffy kind of delivery.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very Daffy-esque. And then we get this ending where the wolf goes into his house, and get this reveal that it was the pigs, in fact, who blew down the house, the big bad wolf.
Yeah.
Which led to them cutting off his tail. As we go back to the present day, as Sylvester Jr. here, you know, like, oh, you believe, starting to believe that malarkey. Do you think this is malarkey? As he turns his ass around like there's a bandage on him. And, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good ending. I like that. It's very good, yeah. Natural, and we're out. But... And,
yeah.
Then it's like stops mid-frame as he opens up like a side door and goes, of course, we actually know that I lost my tail because I lost it in a swinging door.
Was that the actual ending? Because that's not the one I saw on...
Oh! What was the one you... He said something. Like, he interrupted the Iris out to say something.
Oh, then maybe I cut it off too soon.
I did? Well, yeah, because it was such a perfect natural transition. The very end, he's like, of course, I actually lost it because of this. Blah, blah, blah. Then...
Well, I like that better, actually, because it's honestly...
I did?
If he's telling the truth, it's not as good of an ending. Because the ending of the trial of Mr. Wor... The ending of the trial of Mr. Wolf works because there's ambiguity about whether or not he was actually telling the truth, and most of the time it's like he's lying. And this one, it's like, okay, it's a good story, but there's no way it's actually the truth, and it turns out, yeah, no, he's actually bullshitting. And I like the fact that he admits it even in the last second of the cartoon. Also, can you picture, because there's the bit where he's like, oh, what a lot of malarkey. Can you imagine, it must have been... Well, at this age, a 50-year-old Joe Biden watching this in the theater going, I like that word.
So, in my opinion, this short was okay. It wasn't as good as the Tex Avery shorts, which...
No.
It's not as... Listen, it's so damn easy to rail against McKimson. It really is. But... It's just fine. You know, it's very much, you know, he has these pig characters he already has. So I do another one. So he did, and kind of doing a, once again, as we'll get into later, ripping off a fellow colleague's idea of doing an alternate Big Bad Wolf story. And, some decent gag work in this, but it's, you know, it's fine.
Yeah. And it's clear the more you think about it, how much of this idea that works comes from the foundations of other cartoons and how much of the short that doesn't is the stuff that McKimson added. And because the concept of this is the best part. It's like, all right, the wraparound sort of thing might be the best thing here. But the actual story about how the pigs did it and how they were just annoying kids that just terrorized him, not as good, especially in comparison to Trial of Mr. Wolf, where Red Riding Hood is this menace who absolutely just, you know, he wants to kill the wolf and wants to make his, like, grandmother's a furrier or something, and they want to terrorize him.
That's a lot more interesting than this, bullying. It's like, oh, no.
It's just a bit too simple for me.
It is.
I mean, McKimson just does a couple things I wouldn't have done. It's nice as a post-40s fairy tale short. It's just not as good as something like The Windblown Hair. And it's not as good as a lot of the ideas that inspired it.
I'm going to give this short 3 out of 5 animals.
That's exactly what I'm giving it. It's fine, does some things well, does some things I wouldn't have done.
All right, let's do what you guys had to say about these fairy tale shorts.
All right, I'll do the sweater one. Our first comment is from Anthony's Animation Talk. Says, funnily enough, Turntail Wolf is an upcoming one for me. Ooh, beat you to it. Ah, very nice. And according to Keith Scott, there was a musical bit called King for a Day, recorded but left in the cutting room floor. I remember reading about this when I was doing research for this one, King for a Day, that they tried to, I think they were going to fit it in during the sequence where the pigs were torturing the wolf, and I think that it belabored the point. He asked, do you agree that a musical there was right to be cut? I do agree it was cut, because what else would it have done that was different? It would just do the same things that it would have done anyway, and, you know, it didn't need to be there anyway.
I think it was a noble attempt to get a song in there, even though there's already so much going on in that cartoon, I feel it would have kind of just... would have let stretch things out to a point where it's not needed. Alright, I'm coming here from the Pemmy and James podcast, collaborators of the show, who said that, I'm sure you guys saved yourselves, but the Turntail Wolf feels like the leftover ideas from Kimson's prior shorts, It's Hummer Time, and Early Tibet, which are frankly superior cartoons.
I can see that. Knowing early Tibet, I think that, yeah.
The chaotic energy of Swat the Fly at least is good for a yes. chuckle, but really, this cartoon is mostly memorable for the final punchline. Oh, you mean the one that Jordan skipped over?
Yes, the one I skipped over, yes. Thank you for reminding everybody. Yeah, memorable, as in I completely forgot to actually watch it.
All right, thank you so much for the comments this week, guys.
Before we get to what we're doing next week, we just want to take this opportunity to thank the people that have subscribed to our Patreon. People such as TriScrew, Andrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the guy, not the drink. They have helped us out by pledging anywhere from $1 to $5 on our Patreon, and they get perks like being thanked in the middle of an episode in addition to their commentaries that they get that we record, as well as early access to episodes and handwritten letters from me and also playbacks of live streams. So if you want to become a patron just like those four that I thanked in the middle of this episode, you can follow our patron at patreon.com/TNQAF.
So for next week's episode, which is the one right before our movie episode. So
they really creep up on you, don't they?
They do. They really do. So, again, I swear I didn't plan this. I'm like, oh, that one Catherine Hepburn mm-hmm. joke is so much like an Animaniac sort of gag. It's so funny. So anyway, for next week's show, we're covering more Animaniacs, but yeah. not how you would expect it, because through this show, we covered the 90s series, and we covered the reboot. Now, it is time for a head-to-head match of the two.
Yeah.
This is not a comparison you're allowed to do, Looney Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bring any episode down.
So all the people that have been salty about the new Animaniacs, you might want to hear what we have to say, because you may have been really unfair to this show in the last couple of months.
Yeah, maybe, a little.
So play nice.
I picked two episodes that are kind of similar. They each have a similar sort of story to them, so there's some sort of connective to it. So the episodes we are covering are from the 90s show. It's Ragamuffins with Woodstock Slappy.
Well, I love that one.
Yeah, it's a classic. I adore that one. And just like,
guess!
Probably guess why.
And
we're comparing it against an episode from season 3, episode 4 of the Animaniacs reboot, which has the titles of Fantasy / Oiber Nachtmare, ending with Mad Mouse Furry Road, which is a Pig in the Brain segment where Pinky and the Brain go to a desert music festival. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh. They go to, like, Coachella or something?
I haven't seen the episode. I don't know if it's Coachella or Burning Man.
Oh, God. Pinky and the Brain at Burning Man. Can you imagine? Pinky, you're pondering what I'm pondering.
I think so, Brain, but what smells like feces?
That's you, Pinky. Right?
Oh, don't I look ravishing in it?
That's besides the point.
Yes. Yes!
Which means also this will be the return of my impressions of those two.
Woo!
So.
So, stay tuned next week for some fun Animaniacs as we'll be going into our next movie episode, which you
guess what it is.
So stay tuned for that. Alrighty, so that is the end of this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkCallum1995.
You can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow us at that_Looney, both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first results.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we post clips from episodes. We have fun with that. There's uploads every week or so, every other week on some occasions. We also have a TikTok channel, account, or whatever. where we post bits from episodes that we also do on YouTube Shorts. Find us there. Also, if you want to, like I said earlier, if you want to donate to the podcast and help us along, go to www.patreon.com/TNQAF.
All right. So until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. And this concludes our lesson on why not to program an episode with one McKimson short with two really good Tex Avery shorts. Good night.